The microphones are on.
Is your microphone on?
Sure is, baby.
Is there levels coming through?
Those levels are coming through good.
Are your levels coming through the microphone, Damien?
Yes, Kelly.
Are my levels coming through the microphone?
Yeah, I've got to turn yours down and mine up.
Great. Is it recording?
Yes. I just wanted to say, it's pretty good acting, huh?
Just so we all are on the same page, because you may have noticed there was no podcast last week. Damien didn't communicate anything out, which maybe one of us should have, but we're very sorry if you're waiting for a podcast and nothing came. It's because we recorded one. And Damien, do you want to fill in the blanks?
Yeah, Kelly switched my microphone off at the beginning of the episode and didn't tell me. And so there was no sound when I went to edit from my microphone.
Right.
It's even though you're another example of Kelly trying to sabotage my career.
So I turned your microphone off, did I?
Yeah.
Even though you were looking at the levels. You were looking at the levels for the entire podcast, noticing that your levels were never going up because there was no sound coming out of your microphone. Is that right?
I couldn't look at the levels because I can only look at you because you're so beautiful.
Oh, fuck it, there we go.
Because I'm so in love with my wife,
here
guys.
Here we go.
Oh.
Fuck, here we go.
One, two, three. This is... Should we just watch it real quick? A podcast in which a husband and wife bitch at each other in the intro... In every episode, I'm Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 110 years of nagging school to be called Mr. I like you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian Galden. It's a Kelly. I want Fasuga. Here she is.
Hi.
Hi.
I mean, I've already done this podcast about this film, but I will try.
Is this what it's going to be like the whole episode? Because let's just scrap it. We'll just scrap it. I'll turn this fucking podcast around right now.
Christmas is over. so I don't know, like, what – I can't remember what I said, what I didn't say, so well, I might not did, say something because –
Well, hang on. As far as the audience are concerned, you didn't say anything.
No, but I don't know, like –
So it doesn't matter.
I don't know when I say something, like I actually might think, oh, did I say it on this one already or did I say it on the other one that didn't come out, you know?
But it doesn't matter because no one's heard the other one.
No,
so just let rip.
No. So like in 30 minutes I'll go to say something and then you'll be like, you've already said that today. And I'm like, oh, I thought I said it last week, you know?
No, look, here, can I give you a tip?
No.
At the end of the podcast when we talk about the film, just talk about the film, because when you talked about it last week, no one's heard that.
Righto. I took my glasses off.
Righto.
So what have you been watching this week?
I've watched a whole bunch of stuff. I went and saw The Bike Riders. Did I talk about that? I don't think I've talked about that on the podcast.
Oh, I thought you had, but...
Oh, maybe I did. Well, you know what? I want to bring something up real quickly, and then maybe we could have a little chat about this topic.
Mm.
Are film reviewers shit in 2024? I feel like there was more of a
Isn't that what we're doing?
Yeah, but we're not. Mm. I don't think anyone could accuse us of portraying ourselves as serious film critics.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm. We're just a couple of fucking idiots who give a score at the end. You know?
Yeah.
But actual film critics who, like, their criticism gets put into Metacritic and shit.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring it up is that The Bike Riders, a film in which I was not moved emotionally. I wouldn't say I was bored, but I felt no tension and was not moved emotionally in what is meant to be a very adult emotional film for 2.5 hours.
Mm.
Has a Metacritic score of 70.
Hmm.
Now, a lot of these critics have obviously read the subtext of the Austin Butler... Tom Hardy relationship as being a gay one in the 60s that they couldn't explore. Mm. And so Austin Butler basically had to leave Tom Hardy and get together with the English girl that's in the film.
Mm.
And I think that's probably you know, coloured some scores of like, ah, well, this is a brave movie because...
But they didn't explore the homosexual relationship.
No, not at all.
So it's not brave at all.
And he ended up with a woman at the end of it. The story would have been brave if Hardy and Butler had actually gotten together.
Did they get together in real life?
Well, no, because the film, like I was saying when I spoke about it the first time, is based on like a coffee table book of these amazing pictures and interviews from a motorcycle gang in the 60s. But there was no story there. There was just little bits and pieces of this woman talking about her husband, you know, being dedicated to the gang and then eventually leaving to be with her. Which is also this awful ending where she's like standing in her kitchen all smug and happy that her husband's given up the one thing that makes him happy. You know, it's like, I don't think anyone's happy here except the... Anyway, because I was listening to a podcast during the week and they were talking about how much they love the bike riders. And these are people that I respect. And I was like, is it just the way a film posits itself colors the way people interact with it? So this film is an art house, you know, American art house film that posits itself as being a very serious film, so therefore it gets good reviews. Even though the accent work in this film alone is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy, like some of the worst Chicago accents you've ever fucking heard in your life, Stokes. Like when you watch it, you will be like, what is going on here? Like you've studied in Chicago, you've been there, you will watch this and go, how did the director not tap these actors on the shoulder and go, hey, what are you doing? Honestly, it's so over the top. If they sound like they're in a Da Bears sketch from SNL in the 90s, you know what I mean? That in itself should be worthy of criticism, but I haven't seen any of it in any of the critiques whatsoever.
Yeah, there's wank. It's like the Banjos of Ed Sheeran movie we watched. Like there's...
The Banjos of Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. There's like... There's like real... There's movies that are just like wank fest. Like people who loved Saltburn, like they're such wankers in terms of, oh, I guess... Oh, you're such an amazing, brave mover. And so that's the kind of people like Saltburn sound like they would like this motorcycle movie.
Yeah, I mean, Saltburn is actually a terrible film. I wouldn't say that The Bike Riders is terrible. It's fine. Completely, like this podcast I was listening to, they were like, oh, I can't stop thinking about it. Like maybe you can't stop thinking about the awful accents. Or the fact that the main protagonist, if what people are enjoying about the film is that it explores sort of male sexuality and relationships in the 60s and stuff, and the fact that like, oh, isn't it so sad that they couldn't get together? Okay. But that's all subtextual. That's not said like on a surface reading at all. So The film itself is not being brave in any shape or form. It's not, you know, maybe the counter argument to my argument is like, oh, well, it's a subtle film, so, you know, pick up on the subtext, fuckwit. But I did. I just, not at any point was I engaged in the characters. The characters aren't fleshed out. The story's bare, you know. Put it this way. It feels like a film that was based on a fucking coffee table book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which it was.
So I just wonder, like, I just feel like as I get older and the more films we watch and the more that we sort of, like, think about them critically and read the films, to use a wanky term, that I'm so far removed from the general consensus on most films that either, I don't know. Like, do you ever feel, or do you not give a fuck about this?
I think that there are wankers who put certain films up on a pedestal, which it doesn't deserve it. And it's because it's this artistic elite. They're like, oh, yeah, Saltburn, so brave, so brave. And I don't care about them because we don't have the same artistic relationship. If someone's going to put a movie down as rated bad when it's a good film, like, yeah, okay, cool. no problem. You know, I know that I'm going to enjoy a film for whatever it's worth. Like things like that movie we watched with Emily Blunt, The Fall Guy. Like I can't imagine that. Let me look it up. I can't imagine that would have like killed it in Rotten Tomatoes because it was so silly. It's like the Oscars. The Oscars are notorious for not letting funny people win Best Actor or Best Actress.
The Fall Guy has a better Metacritic score than The Bike Riders.
Well, that it should. It's a better film.
By 3 points. So it's at 73 and The Bike Riders is at 70. You might really like The Bike Riders. The film that we're talking about today has a Metacritic score of 55, which I think is
underrated. That's crazy. This film feels better than that.
Unfair. Yeah. And then when you look at the audience rating, it's 6.8, which I think is much more reasonable.
Yeah. It's because that dramas and wanky films get regarded highly than funnier stuff.
Yeah.
That's just like
how there's a difference between a mood film. So like you know, I think a lot of people go, it's a mood film, you know, it's a hangout film or whatever. Well, I would say a really good version of a hangout film is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is infinitely more interesting. These characters you're drawn to immediately, like Brad Pitt's Cliff Booth in that film is so interesting that Quentin Tarantino wrote a whole book, like a whole novel about Cliff Booth before the movie. And it was great and fascinating. If you wrote a book about any of the characters from The Bike Riders, no one would give two shits, like just at all, you know. And if you're looking for a mood film, then Lost in Translation or Akira are films that, you know, like I just wonder if these critics actually have a like their own personal library of films in their head. Like how many films are they actually watching and what are they comparing these films to?
Yeah, I always hate the fact that like someone like Ryan Gosling, what he did as Ken in Barbie and even how he was in Fallout, I'm just the Fall Guy.
Stooks is about to get on a Ryan Reynolds soapbox again. Here we go. Oh, not Ryan Reynolds.
He's underappreciated how hard it is to do that kind of comedy. Like the way he played Ken, like that is so hard. And if you picked the top five dramatic actors around his age range at the moment, you know, they would never, ever be able to do this role. Like someone like, who's the guy that played Stephen Hawking? Eddie Redmayne or whatever?
Oh, Eddie Redmayne. Yeah,
he looks like a really, really serious actor. And anytime he's in anything, everyone's like, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He's so good. He's so good. Mate, you do Ken and see how it goes. He won't be able to, he will not.
No.
People like him will not be able to do. But then if you put Ryan in one of Eddie's films, he'd be able to do it. And this is what I feel like with someone like Gosling is hideously underrated at what he can do and what he deserved. And I think he did get a lot of like praise and accolades for Ken, but it wasn't enough for me. It needed to be absolutely like he needed to win an Oscar for it. And the person he lost the Oscar to, it was Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
And I'm like comparing like how hard is it to act the part he played and how hard is it to act the part that he played?
Yeah. Well, There is a massive difference. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. But the Academy Awards are bullshit. And
it's bullshit. I clapped to Will Smith, you know, when he won.
Yeah, but fuck we – but also like – RDJ had done 15 years of Iron Man and then finally did like a real film. And I think everyone was like, holy shit, Robert Downey Jr. is a really good actor. I was like, yeah, yes. Yes, he is. When he's not like, when you don't have like a full close up of his face with like little bits of like computer graphics around it where he's like, Cody, I'm coming in hot, saying shit like that, you know? Mm. But
he's fucking great.
But in 10 years' time, he'll do some performance that's fine and he'll win an Academy Award for that as a Lifetime Achievement Award. You know what I mean? Mm. And he'll beat out some great young actor who's actually deserves the award. But yeah, as far as criticism, I mean, awards is another thing. And I agree with everything you've said. I just find criticism is like, I think there's a lot of groupthink to it.
Mm.
Like, I genuinely, at the risk of sounding like a fucking Joe Rogan, you know, like, fuckwit. I just think with either way, like, I don't know. It just feels like one review will come out and then everybody just sort of falls into line with that. I don't see too many dissenting voices. And when you read the actual critiques themselves, they're shit. They either look like they've been put through ChatGPT or it's like, I didn't like, you know, like it's what we do here.
Mm.
Oh, I didn't like his mustache. I didn't like his, you know, there's no background or a historical context or context of the actual, like I don't see critics talking about film stocks that's used or the type of cameras or the sort of shots that are set up, or I don't see any of that. It's all like, oh, I felt this way, or it made me feel like that. Well, I want an expert to talk to me about how the film was made and executed. We can do that. We do that every week. Talk about how we feel about stuff. That's easy.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think a lot of films suffer because of that, because people can't actually break down what's happening at a filmic level. Anyway, that was just my little rant. I just wanted to... But yeah, just don't pay attention to Metacritic is basically what I'm saying. Or Rotten Tomatoes or any of that shit. Fine. Try and find good film critics who actually critique films and support them. I don't have any at the moment. I actually don't have any film critics that I follow, but I'll try and find some and bring them to the podcast next week. But I watched that. I watched a film called Beyond the Law, starring Charlie Sheen as an undercover cop who breaks a motorbike, breaks into a motorbike gang to break up a drug ring. Some of the weirdest fucking decisions I've ever seen in a film in my life.
Love a Sheen.
What I love about it is that everybody in all of the biker gangs look too clean. Like, it looks like people are dressing up to go to a Halloween party as a biker or something. You know what I mean? Like, Michael Madsen is like the bad guy.
Did you just hear that? Jimmy just did the biggest burp.
Just like his mum. Yeah. Michael Madsen is the bad guy, and he like, every time you see him, he's wearing a different bandana. And genuinely looks like it's just been cracked out of a pack, you know? Like,
the costume department is like, new bandana.
Yeah, like there's no dirt or filth or anything. Like these guys essentially live in the middle of the desert in Arizona, but they're like in these clean, crisp clothes and stuff. Yeah, I can't even be bothered going into the full details of the film. If you like shitty action films, check this out because it's bizarre. Charlie Sheen's backstory gets more and more complicated as you go through the film. It's fucking hilarious. with each revelation of what's happened to this guy, he has had the worst life on the face of the planet. But anyway, there's motorbikes and guns, and there's a weird character that, like, Charlie Sheen can't convince anyone he's a bad guy. And then this biker guy comes up to him in a bar and then basically is like, hey, I really like cops. I'll help you be, you know, like he walks up to him and he's like, I can tell that you're an undercover cop. And Charlie Sheen's like, no, I'm not. Well, yes, I am. And I'm really bad at it. And then this guy is like, I'll help you learn about bike gangs. I know everything there is to know about bikies. It's such a script written about bikies about someone who's never been within fucking 50 foot of a biker ever. But anyway, on the back of the bike rows, if you want to see a good motorcycle gang movie, check out Beyond the Law with Charlie Sheen, 1993.
Was it better than the other one?
Which other one? The Bike Riders. That's what I just said.
No. Do you think it was like...
No. I don't genuinely think it was better. The Bike Riders is a better film than Beyond the Law.
Yeah. But sometimes I like a terrible 80s film.
I love terrible films, man. I keep talking to my best mate Lucas about going to see Borderlands because it's a film based on a series of video games, which I love. Lucas doesn't mind. With an all-star cast, Kate Blanchett, Kevin Hart, Jamie Lee Curtis. A lot of good cast. But the reviews are bad.
Mm, that's a shame.
But again, it doesn't really mean shit because there's probably something that's happened that has made all the critics upset about the film. And then so they're all marking it 40 and 30. Although the trailers do look kind of bad. But I'm happy to go see that because it'll be fun, you know?
Yeah. The thing is, if it knows it's a bad film, then it's a great time. But if it doesn't know it's what it is, we all know that it is a bad film.
Yeah.
Like if it's trying to be something it's not. But when those films know what they are. I think those films
are kind of – I actually think the opposite of that. I think like when the films are trying – like the best bad films are the ones that are really trying to be something, you know, and they fail, and that's what kind of makes it interesting and fun, you know. I get what you're saying about films like The Fall Guy and it's like this is a dumb – Hollywood action
knows
film.
Knows what it is, and then when films know what they are.
But it was still good, you know.
They're great.
Yeah, but that was still a well-made, well-executed film, you know.
Yeah, but because it knew what it was.
Yes. But I think the most fun are the car accidents, you know, like of films that like are really going for something and they fuck it up so hard that it's just a spectacular failure, and I enjoy watching those.
See, that really frustrates me. I can't watch films like that. When it's like, oh, have you seen blah, blah, blah. Like, what's that Furiosa movie?
Yeah, Furiosa's meant to be really bad.
Yeah, like I'm not going to waste my fucking time because there's something about a film that is made poorly that is trying to be amazing that just I can't because it just goes against everything I believe. I'm not going to waste my time. You know what I'd rather do? I'd rather watch Mad Men or episodes of ER or episodes of 30 Rock or something else. I'd rather re-watch something I've watched a million times. I'd rather watch A Few Good Men again because at least then I've seen it a million times. I know it's great. I know I'm going to have a good time. Then waste my time watching Furiosa. But also something about that actress that I really hate. I think she's insanely insufferable in everything she's in.
I don't know which that actress.
Anna Joy. Oh, fuck. I don't know what her name is.
What else has she been in?
Queen's Gambit. And that terrible movie about the menu where everyone dies. And she's just like one of those people where she's so hot right now because she's so, you know, and she's doing this like Chanel campaign and because she's so gorgeous and beautiful. And, you know, she's got massive Ozempic face and it's just gross.
What's Ozempic face?
Where they're sunken in because they've lost so much weight from Ozempic that there's no fat in their face. They look like that, like their cheekbones are poking out.
So it's not called heroin chic anymore? It's called Ozempic face?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're not on heroin, they're on Ozempic.
What other girly stuff can you tell me about that I wouldn't know from the world of TikTok?
I think that tampons are bad.
Tampons are bad.
Yeah.
Like in the sense of like they're uncool or?
I think that they are really bad for women to wear tampons.
This is just you. Mm-hmm. This is just you saying this now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, but there's like studies done where they literally have not done enough studies about tampons and the effects it has on women's bodies and reproductive organs. And okay. I found that when I wore tampons, I had pretty bad period pain. And now that I don't wear them anymore. It's a lot better.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't like them. I think that there's a lot of chemicals in them and, you know, like, and then you get like natural ones, but you just like, it just, you leak through them. Moon cup, baby. All about the cup.
Are you?
Well, not recently because of, you know, IVF issues. But, yeah, moon cup is... Look, I'll tell every woman, I used a moon cup for years and it was incredible.
I'm being followed by a moon cuppy.
Moon cuppy. Rose Bishop has a really funny joke where she talks about using a moon cup.
Yeah.
She's like, it's so gross, but I love it. She's just like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, you know, you go to work and just pretend that you're not just like, you know, you don't have like a bucket of blood inside of you. The way she just says it's a bucket of blood just like inside you, like just talking like la la la, everything's normal when you just got it's a bucket. it's pretty funny.
What I was sort of more fishing for like celebrity type stuff.
Oh, okay. About women?
Well, no, because you're just on TikTok a lot and stuff. So, and well, I don't really go on there. So, you know, what's some Hollywood goss? What's trending? What's happening?
Well, I watched this week. I watched a documentary about some TikTok dancers.
Okay.
And on Netflix. It basically, there's a cult in LA.
Of course there is. It's called Hollywood.
There he is. There he is, everyone. Oh, but I don't know why I feel so tired right now.
I'm trying to branch out to get a right wing.
Yeah, it's called
head, like a talking head show is happening.
You can do it.
I actually couldn't.
It's called Dancing for the Devil.
Dancing for the Devil.
And basically, it's a church in LA that has also branded itself. So they had a lot of their followers were dancers. Okay. So they created this talent agency called 7M.
Of course, the church did.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Church. What? When we say church, what kind of church? Who's? What flavor are we talking about?
Like we're talking about a cult.
Yeah, but are we? Pastor. We're all. It's not the big guy, the OG. It's not that God. It's not Buddha. It's not.
It's a God. No, it's God. It's God in the church. No, it's the Bible.
Ah, Christian. Okay.
Yeah, Christian.
So JC and the big guy.
Yeah.
The Holy Trinity.
Trinity.
Right.
Yeah, Trinity killer. Trinity rapist. So that's a storyline that's going through Law and Order SVU at the moment. The Trinity rapist.
No, they ripped that off from Dexter.
But yeah, no, that's a Trinity killer.
Yeah.
Well, this is the Trinity. Trinity is not an exclusive word. But also, if you want to really go down the rabbit hole, Trinity Rapist came up in Law and Order SVU before the episodes of Dexter.
Do you know that for certain?
Yeah, because the time frame of the episodes and stuff. But I can't watch Law and Order anymore because you, in a rage of fury, cancelled Amazon Prime. So I can't watch Law and Order anymore. Anyway, so Shekinah Church. And basically, it's a three-part mini docu-series. So basically what would happen is you get all these TikTok dancers and they do all these, really great videos and they get monetized. So from these videos, they got, ads, like car ads. So just all this money was piling in and these kids were just giving it straight to the church.
Mm.
And then the kids were getting an allowance of like $50 a week. For all their work.
Oy.
And and there's alleged sexual assault from in there. Like the guy that runs it, isn't a good person, sounds awful, and he kind of really makes you alienate your family, as a cult does.
Mm.
And this is about two sisters who did content together, and then one of the sisters ended up getting really stuck into the church, like a part of the cult. So the documentary is really from that family trying to get her back, and they can't get her back. And they've reached out to other fans. It's funny because when they realized that she was they lost to this cult, they started reaching out to the parents of other people that were in the cult, and they were like, yeah, us too. So together they made this documentary because they were and it films them going to the police station, calling up a cult hotline. They're trying to break this thing down, but because they put themselves as a church as well, they're not paying taxes, and then the police can't get in and do stuff as much as they are supposed to. All this sort of stuff, blah, blah, blah. It's really interesting because I went on Instagram and the dancers that in the story, they're still in the cult, and it's just funny watching all the comments, people, because God forbid they turn off their comments. But they can't because this TikTok thing is where their money comes from.
Yeah.
And all the comments are just why did you treat your mum and dad like that? Why? It's just fucking insane. It's pretty insane. It's pretty horrific and insane. And yeah. It was good. It was good. Mm. But it's just, awful. That, this family that you, yeah. And then when the documentary was coming out, when they knew it was coming out, there's all these recordings of the pastor saying you need to, because he's always alienated, made sure they alienated their families, and there's all these recordings of him going, all right, so you need to if it's Christmas, you need to go and see your family. You need to tell them that, you know, I'll come and visit, but don't talk to me about the church. Like, he tells them, because we've got so much media scrutiny and they hate us and they hate God, you know, you need to show up and really make sure that the media doesn't target us anymore. Mm. Like, it's really strategic. Yeah, yeah, really fucked. Anyway, but we should talk about the film we watched this week.
Yeah, so this week we watched the new Guy Ritchie film, which is called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. I thought we could sort of go through the beats of the film a little bit, because we sort of just bounce all over the place, maybe be a bit more structured of, or at least give like a sort of log line of what the film is about.
Yeah.
Are you cool with that?
Yeah.
So essentially, the film is set in the Second World War towards, I don't know, about two-thirds of the way through the war. England is getting absolutely decimated by German bombing. And they need America to come and help them. But America cannot get across the Atlantic because of German U-boats, submarines. Well, U-boats are this other thing. But anyway, their German naval fleet is stopping America from joining the war. Winston Churchill and a couple of high-ranking Ministry of Defense officers decide that they're going to do an undercover mission with a group of renegade we never really find out whether they're ex-naval officers or naval officers.
I'll be honest, they're bad people. Well, they don't need to be.
They don't need to be. That's in the trailer. So basically, Henry Cavill and his weird bunch of very handsome guys go off on a sailboat to basically go and blow up this important fleet of German boats that are stopping America from joining the war. So it's a hypocritical mission. But the other side story to this is that supposedly this story came out of Winston Churchill's secret files of the war, which were unclassified in 2016. And one of the person's names that comes up in this and is one of the high-ranking naval officials is Ian Fleming. Mm. Yes, that Ian Fleming, who created James Bond.
Mm.
And so Ritchie did more digging, and there was a book that came out about it, that basically Henry Cavill's character and the other guys to a lesser extent are an amalgamation of, well, essentially Henry Cavill's character, Gus, is James Bond.
Dude, so I didn't know this going in, but he is really charming and he's like, hello ladies, how are we?
Henry Cavill is so fucking good in
Henry
this film.
Henry Cavill is another fucking Ryan Gosling now to me.
He's so good in this
film.
He's
so good. He's so charming. Throw that Batman, Superman bullshit away, man, because this guy is capable of so much more.
You know what it does show? Sorry to interrupt you, but you know what it does show? It shows how poorly, I mean, I think we all sort of know this, but how poorly directed those films were.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's capable of this.
Yeah, of course.
Like, Henry Cavill's capable of this performance in this film. Yeah. You know, gets a good director who's an actor's director and lets him really shine. When you go back and watch him in the Superman films, it's like, Jesus fucking Christ.
I mean, the poor kid just did the Superman films because he would have got paid a ton of money. And, you know, you fucking do those shit films that, even though they're terrible films, but you get paid the money so you can do the films like this Guy Ritchie film. Because he is, I can see exactly how Ian Fleming got his inspiration for Bond from this guy. Because, you know, he's not wearing a black tie, but he's really, and he's not like fucking women everywhere.
No.
Like James Bond is. He's just uber charming. Like when you talk, like you're talking about serious stuff with the war, where he's like, I'll say I need to get one of my friends out of the Gestapo prison. No, no, no. We can't do this without him. He's one of the best. Like, it's just, he is so gorgeous, endearing. I cannot wait to see what else Henry Cavill can do, because he just, there are some actors where I just cannot get my eyes off them. You know, Gosling's another one. Like, there's certain people that doesn't matter what they do or where they're in, I feel like, and you know what? Tom Cruise is that. Tom Cruise, it doesn't matter what film he's in. Like, I really liked his Jack Reacher films. I fucking find him so good to watch. Shame about the Scientology stuff. But that's...
He's magnetic.
He's so... That's the word. He's magnetic. And Henry Cavill in this film, and he is surrounded by absolute really strong fucking cast. There's no acting in this film where I'm like, oh, fuck, man, this person sucked or whatever. Like, everyone is top... And the thing is, I will say that they're top notch.
The guy, just on that, sorry. The guy who plays Jack Reacher, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. His Swedish accent is a little weak. But that's a very small criticism. It's a very, very small criticism.
But I think that the times...
Because he's good in the film.
I think that the times that he's doing the Swedish accent, I think that there's elements where he's putting it on with the, like, because he's, because there's a bunch of times in the film where he doesn't.
Because they come across German and... Yeah,
he doesn't sound like that. So those things that where he's like, oh, it's a bad accent, I think that was on purpose because he's trying to like put off the Nazis that were there.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, but I feel like what I really liked about the cast is that they did not cast, like they casted people in it who have done stuff and have been around, but they didn't like put other A-listers in there who could, like there's no Casey Affleck. There's no fucking, you know, they didn't put these like, like studios would be like, well, we need another name. We need a big name. We need a big name. And because it's Guy Ritchie, like Henry Cavill's probably the biggest name.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this guy here was the guy from Crazy Rich Asians. This guy here has done a ton of British like low budget films. Like they, this guy here plays the TV version of Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
Like Guy Ritchie has on purpose chosen the best fucking people for the fucking role instead of bowing down to the what are they called? The bowing producers. Down to the producers and the movie company by like, oh, but we need, if you want us to give you $20 million to make it, you've got to put in fucking Anna Soy, whatever her fucking name is.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they didn't because Guy Ritchie goes, fuck that. I'll put in what I want to put in. And it's good because they're unknowns. They're fucking good, man. Like charismatic, like the black guy that is on the island already and he has a husky voice. I don't know where he's from, but
definitely seen him in other things.
Yeah, and he's always like a real side bit character. And I know he's been around for years, like a British guy, but he's like that role for him could have been played, you know, very like it was very like I'm the straight guy, very simple. But there's something about him where he really drew me in of like, there was a level of empathy that I felt for him. Like, just say someone like, who's the guy in the Mummy films and he's Scottish? And
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah, him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he could have played that role and he would have made it maybe zany, or I would not have felt as much empathy and, you know, yearning for that guy to fucking win if it was someone else. Like, the guy he put in, man, Guy Ritchie, really fucking come back. Because the last few things he's done, I haven't really been a fan of at all. This is good. This is good Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a fun action film. And there's sort of two things going on at once where, like, it's a sort of serious war film, but with the, I don't know, it's kind of got, like, the vibe of, like, a Bond film, like a 60s or 70s Bond film. So there's like, there's quips and jokes and it's an action comedy film. And I don't think there's enough of that in film at the moment. It's really refreshing to watch. I mean, I know Fall Guy was that and we really enjoyed it. And Bullet Train was that as well. But that's one director doing that. So to see Guy Ritchie doing it, I enjoyed this film so much. I went and I'm working insane hours at the moment and got only watched half an hour of the film. But I watched the first half an hour of The Gentleman. So that is a film that has an insane cast. It's like Matthew McConaughey, Hugh Grant, Tom Hardy, fucking what's his face from the bike rider TV show, Charlie Hoffman, fucking Sons of Anarchy.
I never watched Sons of Anarchy.
He was the main guy in Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, I never watched it.
There's more people in it. It's like there's like 10 A-grade actors in the film. But I'm going to go back and watch the rest of that. I'm going to go through and watch Guy Ritchie's films because the first two I really liked a lot. And then I can't remember what his third film was at all. But
Guy Ritchie?
Yeah.
He did Lock, Stock and Snatch, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The first two films I was really into, but I can't remember what his third film was.
Oh, right. I thought it was the one with, what's her fucking name? Madonna. Because remember he made that film with Madonna and it was really bad?
Yes, I do.
No?
Well, I'm looking it up, but...
Oh.
So maybe try and...
Was it Castaway?
Vamp for me or something while I'm doing this.
Oh, okay.
Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch, Swept Away.
That's the one. His third film was Swept Away with Madonna because he was married to Madonna and was just
that was a punchline for a while.
Yeah, it was really... Because she can't act. Then he did
Revolver in 2005. So he didn't make a film for 3 years after that. Then he made Revolver. Then he made Rock and Roller, which I've always heard good things about but never watched. Then he made Sherlock Holmes with Robert Downey Jr., which I actually really enjoyed. Then the second Sherlock Holmes film. Then Man from U.N.C.L.E., which actually has Henry Cavill in it, which is the TV when we recorded last week and I was trying to remember the TV show that he made into a film. That's the one that I was talking about.
I never heard about this.
It feels like for a bit there he was trying to get franchises off the ground because Sherlock Holmes did well. So he did Man from U.N.C.L.E., even though it was reviewed pretty well, people didn't watch it. Then he did King Arthur, Legend of the Sword with that Charlie Hoffman
guy. He directed the Aladdin film with Will Smith. What the fuck?
Jesus Christ, I didn't know that.
Dude, are you kidding? I had no idea.
Then he did The Gentleman, then Wrath of Man with Jason Statham. Operation Fortune, The Covenant, which is also meant to be good, and then The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. So, he's obviously gone back to making sort of blokey films but he went and did his little Hollywood.
Aladdin.
Yeah, so he's done Sherlock Holmes, Man from U.N.C.L.E., King Arthur, Aladdin.
Aladdin and then panned as well.
And then gone, fuck this shit. I'm going to go make film. Because The Gentleman is a very British gangster film.
And that's what he does well.
That's what he does man. British stories. He's a British...
They must have paid him so much money to do the Aladdin film. Why would you do the Aladdin film?
I don't know. Just challenge yourself to see if you could do something different.
And Will Smith as a genie. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a hard act to follow. There's certain films that, Aladdin's such a huge kids film of that generation. Robin Williams was the perfect person to play that character,
I know, I don't understand. I don't understand making these beautiful cartoons that we loved into real movies like Little Mermaid,
because
Aladdin.
People go and see them because it's a known quantity. So people will be like, oh, I love Aladdin. I'll go see the new Aladdin. Because it's got name recognition, right?
Dumb, though.
It is dumb.
I'm going to write a new film with a new plot of characters.
People who make the decisions, the money people, fear the unknown. Even though an artist's job is to be out in the unknown, creating new work.
Need people like Guy Ritchie taking the risks that he takes. This was a good story.
This is much more interesting than fucking Sherlock Holmes. Dude, I enjoyed Sherlock Holmes and I enjoyed his take on it. It's kind of an action-y Sherlock Holmes. And Downey Jr. and Jude Law had good chemistry. But it wasn't I never watched it again. I couldn't tell you one thing that happened in it. I just remember going and watching it at the cinema, having a good time and leaving.
The only Sherlock Holmes that matters is the one with Benedict Crumpet Band, whatever his name is. And Andrew Scott as Mariachi. Dude, Andrew Scott is another one. Andrew Scott is another guy
Mordecai,
that I cannot...
not Mariachi.
Mariachi?
No. Mariachi is a mariachi band. Mordecai is his name. Mordecai? Yeah. Sherlock Holmes and Mordecai. It's like Batman and the Joker.
But Andrew Scott, That guy?
Yes, yes. You
everything
love
he's
Scott,
in yeah. is just, man, he is just, mwah,
he's
chef's
in
kiss.
The new Deadpool Wolverine film.
Great. Yeah, can't wait to see
love
it.
That.
How many grumps you want to give
what
this
did
film?
You
Oh, yeah, that's been funny.
Burnout, crumpet face.
Burnout in, crumpet and... but that's the only shortcomings that matters because that Sherlock Holmes was...
Benjamin Crumpet.
You know what joke I really
pants.
Loved from this film? From the beginning, he's like... From the beginning, like the first scene, they're on a boat and there's Nazis on the boat and there's a confrontation. And he goes, I really want one of those jackets. And then it just keeps on coming up for the film where he's like... I know, like the Nazi...
Yeah, the SS jackets.
Yeah, the
which
big
were
leather
designed
one.
By Hugo Boss, by the
yeah.
way, if you didn't know.
And they're real big and leather and long and stuff. Like they
Is
look,
it Hugo Boss?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was Hugo Boss.
Yeah. Yeah. But like just like, I really love those jackets. I'm going to get me one of those. And then like halfway through the film, like, you know, punching up some Nazis and just walks out of the room wearing the jacket.
I just love stuff where
and no
like,
one mentions it. No one says anything. It's just like, ah, oh, nice. That's fun.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah.
You know what I do like about this film, right? Mm. When they introduce the crew, there's about two lines of backstory for each person. Mm. But it's like, that's like the real, it's really the only exposition dump in the whole film where he's like, this is my crew. You know,
my
Sven,
bunch of scallywags.
Sven Göransson, you know, hates the Nazis because they invaded Sweden. He'll kill as many as he, blah, 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 blah,
blah. Yeah, I like that.
But that's it. That's all we learn about anybody's backstories. We don't know anything. There's none of this shit of like, oh, but who are they? We need to explore the character.
Good guy Richie, like nuance there where he's like, and then I've got Baba. Babs, you never want to get into Babs's bad books because the Nazis killed his brother and he is ready to kill them.
Yeah.
Like just
basically.
Bang.
So basically all of his crew have had some run-in with the Nazis. They've killed someone close to them and they're all... Nazi hunters, essentially,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's good.
But that's it. The same as like when Han Solo gets introduced in Star Wars. We don't know anything about him. We don't find anything about him.
No, it's fine.
In the first three films
don't
at all.
Don't need it. Films
don't need
enough.
It. He's just a scallywag. He's a scallywag. He's down on his luck. He's a, you know, he's a scruffy.
Scallywag.
He's a scruffy nerf herder, you know.
How many grumps do you want to give this one?
I'm going to give it 3.5 grumps.
See, normally if I like something, it gets 4. And then you lose a grump because of a bad casting kind of thing. Like if there's an actor in here who I fucking hate. Because even the chick that played the spy, she's absolutely gorgeous. Like I just – how could God create such a creature – and I was like, oh, she'll be shit because she's gorgeous. But
no, she wasn't.
She wasn't.
No.
She was really good. And, like, she had to, like, speak multiple different languages at different times and stuff. And I really was like, oh, fuck, this is great.
The scene where she has drinks with the insane Nazi commander and she makes a joke about being a Jew.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, no, she, like...
I'm a Jew.
She says to his face, like, I'm Jewish and blah, blah, and then basically says exactly what she wants to say to him about how much of a cunt he is and how racist he is and blah, blah, blah. And then right at the end goes, I'm joking, of course. Like, she's really good.
Yeah.
She's really good.
Yeah.
But
good.
As you know with this podcast, it's no facts, all spoilers, so we don't look anything up. We don't know anyone's names. We don't do any of that shit.
I think we're going to have to give this 4.
Oh, 4. Hello.
Because I really can't find the moments of like where I would, because it was cast.
It's cast.
This is a
well,
good cast.
Look, the cast, it's cast well. The pacing is good. The set,
storyline
the set
is great.
The set pieces seem practical to me. I don't know. Maybe I can't tell anymore.
No, it
but,
was. It was good.
It's shot really beautifully as well.
Yeah.
Like it's all shot sort of around the coast of Spain and the top of Africa and stuff. And. Mm. It's beautiful. Like, it's beautiful scenery.
Listen, I'm going to give it 4 stars. And the reason why it gets the 4 is because he is what, like, the fact that, like, and when you're watching the film, you just, like, because I didn't know the Bond thing. Mm. And it's like, you know, this, you know, the British guy, they're in the cabinet and Winston Churchill, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a guy, you know, Ian, okay, you know, Inspector Fleming or, you know, Soldier Fleming, whatever his name was. And that was it, you know. And he was just a side character. That's all he was. He was the side character to Carrie Hughes and Winston Churchill. And then when it's like, you know, Ian Fleming, blah, 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 you know, wrote James Bond and they believe this is where he's got inspirations, I was like, hot dog. Hot dog. That's exactly where he got his inspiration for James Bond.
Yeah.
100%. And that makes me give this film 4 stars as well, because I just want to really put on a pedestal a film that has made a they've made a movie about a really interesting piece of history. It's not On the Trenches again. It's not D-Day again. Mm. It's not this again. No, give me a small thing. And this is why I love the film Mr. Robert so much. Set in World War II on a boring cargo ship in the city, in the sea, where they don't see any action. But give me the story there. There's a story there. You know, then that's what I like. So four grumps.
Yeah. Okay. Give Henry Cavill the Bond gig.
Mate, give him the Bond. He was supposed to get Bond. He was up against Craig, and they ended up giving it to Craig because Craig was older.
Mm, Craig.
He will be a good Bond man. Great Bond.
Listen, I'm going to put this out here, and I know everyone our age is going to be like, what? I don't think Daniel Craig was a great Bond. I think Casino Royale was fine, and then after that, every other film he was in was a bit shit. I don't find him
charming.
No, he was dull and boring.
Yeah, and I find Pierce Brosnan was always like charming. No,
I'm not
for
a big Pierce Brosnan fan either. Really? In fact, I don't think we've had a good Bond for 20 odd years. 30 even.
I hope it's not Tom Middleton. I just don't think he'll be a good Bond at all.
Yeah, what if it's Bomb Come in My Pants?
They will never give it to him because he's not good looking enough.
No, he's not good looking enough. I think it'll.
But they give it to Idris Elba.
Yeah, I mean,
like, he's charming and hot.
He could be good, yeah.
He'd be great.
Anyway. I think you go for a younger.
Henry Cavill, just do it, you fucks. All right.
Either Cavill or Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You love Aaron Taylor Johnson. He's really good. Aaron Taylor Johnson is another one.
I would rather see him do more interesting stuff, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think he would do it. I think he would keep on going and doing the interesting films he does.
Would be pretty amazing for Cavill. But Cavill's starting to do interesting shit, too. Yeah. But I think he wants to be a movie star. So it would be, I mean, it'd be pretty amazing to have someone play Superman and Bond.
Fuck yeah. I mean, look at him. He's fucking gorgeous.
He might need to trim down a bit to play Bond. He's maybe so fucking big.
Yeah, maybe.
Like
he works on computers. You see all the stuff in the lockdown?
Yeah, he's a nerd. A gamer,
and he like
takes
computers apart and builds computers. Like, he's a beautiful little nerd. I love it. And he just seems really kind. Yeah. You see him in interviews.
He does, but it's always a bit, it's always a Hail Mary when you're doing this with celebrities, because then like in 2 years' time, I'm not saying anything about Henry Cavill, but you just like.
Did you see the thing of him on?
I've gotten to a point where I don't put any faith in any celebrities at all.
I think he's too much of a nerd, and he's had like the same partner for years. And did you see the thing with him on Graham Norton? And he was on with Russell Crowe. And did you see, and just for people to see it, where just Google it, where he's like, Henry Cavill met Russell Crowe when he was 16. And because Russell Crowe was at his school for something, and he was doing proof of life, he was doing. So this was years ago.
Yeah.
And then Henry Cavill was 16. He's like, I want to be an actor. And Russell Crowe's like, oh no, did I give you good advice? I'm so scared. What are you about to say? And I can't remember what he said, but like it was something like, well, if you want it, just remember, don't listen to the people. Like Russell said something really good to him. He goes, and Henry's like, I never forgot it. And I was like, oh, I love him. Russell Crowe
seems like all right. Like he copped a lot of bad press over here in Australia when he, it's typical Australian bullshit of like, he did a lot of good films here in Oz and then got famous, I think.
And then, yeah, like Gladiator, like did like, probably.
No, even before that, he did like LA Confidential and...
Yeah, Quick and the Dead.
Like he's... actually, Quick and the Dead was his first film and then LA Confidential. Anyway, he was a star and then his star was on the rise and just every fucking story about him over here was like crazy Russell Crowe.
It's because he threw a phone at a
paparazzi fuckwit.
It started because he threw an actual desk phone at a hotel employee. So basically he was trying to call Australia to talk to his wife because he's like, you know, my wife gets worried if I don't talk to her by the end of the day when I'm on the other side of the world. And they couldn't call out internationally. So he's gone down and told them, and for whatever reason, it sounds like this hotel staff member was just not helping, like going, oh, you'll have to wait till tomorrow. And he goes, no, I'm staying at this fancy hotel. You mean to tell me that I cannot call my wife? What the fuck is wrong with you people? And I think they were just being a little bit belligerent, and he just pulled the phone from the desk and threw it at the guy and hit him. And that's where it all started, because he got he lost his temper. However, I heard on a podcast the other day that Russell Crowe has said that he's never going to get in shape for a film ever again. And he said, he's like, see me now? This is me. This is what he's going to get forever. And I fucking love that. I am a big fan of that. Where he's like, sorry, never, like, not gonna, nah. Oh, you want me to bulk up? No. He's like, this is my body. This is my type. I'm too old to do all the gladiator bullshit ever again. So this is, you're getting a guy that has a bit of a gut. I fucking love that, man.
A bit of a gut.
I like him. I really like Russell Crowe. Anyway, we should finish because I go to the toilet. This is my international.
Fun dude. He's slowly morphing into Jack Thompson.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. Good. No problem. We always know it's ready to end the
time
podcast.
Time to go because Kelly's going to take a piss.
Yeah, I know. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm so sorry about last week. We'll be more organized and on it. I'm sorry. I really hate that there was a break, but. You know, we couldn't help. We just could not get a time to record again.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
But we love you very much. Tell your friends.
Love you. Tell your friends. Pass it on. Bye, 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 bye,